And to ring the opening bell, a message that may just save everything you have. Pretty dramatic, huh? I was having a conversation with a couple of people who have sons and daughters, and we were talking about how, you know, you're 28, 29, 30 years old, you got a beautiful wife, beautiful husband, beautiful family, beautiful home. Really, all you have to do from that point on is not screw it up, right?
Pretty much.
Don't screw it up. So for those of you who have not had that talk with your parents, or for those parents who have not yet had that talk with your adult children, I would remind them, you got it all. Just don't mess it up and lose everything, because it's not going to be worth it. You think it might be, but it's not. You're going to wind up holding a big old bag full of nothing, and you're not going to be platinum anymore, and you're not going to be swinging. Maybe that's what got you in trouble in the first place. Either way, behave yourself, hang on to what you have, take care of it, value it, treasure it. That's it. I'm off my soapbox.
A good soapbox to be on.
It is, really. You'd be surprised how many people and people that I know, I've spoken to people that are in charge of police departments before, and they've said, I've seen it over and over again where officers have it all and just, and that's not to lambast police officers, but it happens.
That's
everywhere.
Everybody it's from just, every walks of life.
Exactly.
You might be related to some of them.
You got it all, and you throw it away. So don't do that. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk about President Trump and... Bring that up, Tim. That's Frank. We got to respect that. That's chairman of the board there. Professor of political science at Hamline University about redistricting in Texas and President Trump wanting to do away with mail-in voting. Then it's Mike Strain here on WWL. And again, remember, you got it all. Don't screw it up. Man, I got a special programming note for you here. Guess who's going to join Newell Norman, right? I believe right out of the box at 10 o'clock is Governor Jeff Landry. Is going to join Newell Norman and talk about some different things. I don't know. Have we tried to get the governor on in the morning or not? I don't know if we have or not. I'd like to talk to him about some stuff. But anyway, Newell's going to have him on. Maybe it's Politico to Politico. I don't know. Governor Jeff Landry joined Sheriff Newell Norman. Louisiana insurance rates, it says here, is starting to come down. Have you seen that? Plus the indictment of Mayor LaToya Cantrell, mayoral race, Louisiana National Guard troops patrolling the nation's capital, and how Louisiana partnered with federal agencies to disrupt violent gang activity in Baton Rouge. And then he's going to talk to Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser about Amtrak's new service. He's got the number one, number two people in the state. Then he's got a commentary. Then he's going to talk to Lou Fregoso, president and CEO of Manning Family Children's, who crossed the finish line of that Leadville 100 run Sunday morning. And then Rafael Goyeneche, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission, will join us right now. Oh, hot and humid today, but the tropics so far for us, no worries at all. And does it seem to you like August is never ending? I guess because the kids went back to school so early, it seems like it should be mid-September. But, man, we still got 10 days left to August, and the belly of the beast of hurricane season. David Schultz joins us right now, Director of Political Science at Hamline University. How you doing, David?
I am great, and I hope you're doing well.
I am. Tell me about the weather before we start in Minneapolis. What are we looking at today?
Well, what we're looking at today is probably about 80, 82, not too bad. The air is clear. You know, we've had all that, you know, smoke coming in from Canada, mm-hmm. but I'll make you envious. This weekend, it's going to really start to cool off, and our high is going to be about 60 degrees, 65 degrees on Saturday and Sunday, lows in the low 50s. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be sort of our foreshadowing of fall.
Yeah. I did 5 hours of yard work on Saturday in 101-degree heat, so I don't really want to hear that, David. Let's talk about the president. Let's talk about redistricting and what's going on in Texas first.
Okay, so what's going on in Texas is that as of yesterday, I think one of the House, I can't remember if it was the House or the Senate, but one of the Houses voted to redraw the district lines in the middle of the decade so that they could create, I think, approximately five more districts that will be safe for Republicans. Phrased in another way, they're going to try to eliminate some Democrats so that in the next election in 2026, that Republicans would have a chance of being able to pick up additional seats and prevent the Democrats from being able to hold those seats or perhaps take control of the House of Representatives. So it's starting in Texas, where I will simply describe it as legislators trying to game the system to help their party. And now it's kind of creating, what are you going to call it, a ping pong effect or something. California's thinking of doing it. New York's thinking of doing it. So we could see across the country over the next few months, all these states deciding that, you know, we don't like the lines that we drew, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that we're gonna change them so that it favors our party in control.
It seems that whenever we redraw maps here in Louisiana, it inevitably winds up before the Supreme Court. Is that the way it works in every state or not?
Just about, yeah. I was going to say, there may be one or two states out there, but the track record has mostly been since the 1960s when the U.S. Supreme Court said that you have to draw lines, you know, to that are the one person, one vote. And then eventually it talked about racial gerrymanders, et cetera, et cetera. But for the most part, if I were to say that just about every 10 years after the census, every state in the country has their lines drawn by some court, that would be a pretty fair statement. There's probably a couple of them out there, you know, that hasn't happened. But if we were to say 95% plus, that's a pretty good statement.
When it comes to what's going on in Texas, though, before people get all in an uproar, I think you and I had this conversation about gerrymandering goes back to?
Yep, it goes back to, right to the early days of the Republic, you know, that you go back to, well, I think it was like Massachusetts in the early part of the 19th century. Parties were, even back then, trying to game the system and say, well, if we draw this line this way, you know, put these people over this district, these people over in our district here, we can elect more of our people. And it's even become more, I can use the word scientific now, because mm-hmm. we're so predictable. You know, you tell me what party you are, I can tell you how you're going to vote. You know, we have such good data now mm-hmm. that we could draw maps, especially now with computers, that are so good, that are still honoring the one person, one vote, but we can cut around this block, go around Fred's grocery store, things like that, and draw lines that on the face of it look neutral, but which in fact really wind up favoring one political party as opposed to another.
David, let me take a break. We'll pick it up here when we come back. Is there anything that makes the situation in Texas unique other than that it happened during a special session called for the flood?
That's going to be the most unique aspect. And the other part is the fact that the president has called on the Texas legislature to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very unusual for presidents to get involved in this type of a state matter.
But when it comes down to legal or not, that's what the courts decide?
The courts are going to look at whether or not eventually what they're doing violates the Constitution, whether it would violate the one person, one vote, or potentially will it violate some kind of like racial issue, like are they drawing the lines purposely to try to, let us say, hurt persons of color. The courts have said that, and this is from a couple of years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court said that what's called partisan gerrymandering to try to put in vernacular, to screw over one party, these cases won't be heard in federal court.
Won't be heard?
Will not be heard. Basically saying that we don't think the federal courts have what's called the jurisdiction or authority to hear these. And from that decision, that's why we're going to see what we're going to see across the country now, is that the idea of saying, well, heck, if we could now, without being challenged in the federal courts, redraw lines to favor our party, why not? Let's do that. And if we can draw the lines to screw over the other party, sure, why not?
And it's going to be heard in state courts where probably the majority of the people there are of the prominent party. Yes, no?
That's a good argument. Yeah, because in about 40 states of the United States, 40, 41, we have what's called trifectas. One party controls governorship in both houses of the legislature. And often in those states, the courts are also of that same political party.
So at the end of the day, Texas can do whatever they want.
They more or less can probably do whatever they want.
All right, let me pick it up when we come back. David Schultz, our guest, professor of political science at Hamline University. The president says he wants to get rid of mail-in voting. Can he? How do y'all feel about that? You can text me at 504-260-1870. I don't know that it's prone to any more shenanigans than any other type of voting. We'll find out from David when we come back. 623 Traffic Now, WWL. 626 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. A couple of texts come flying in. Mail-in voting definitely should be eliminated. How is it confirmed? Another one says, mail-in voting makes it easier to cheat. Nobody likes cheating. Just stop it. As a Marine, another text says, who has had to mail in several ballots over the years, I don't think they should be done away with, but I think there should be a good vetting process for who gets those ballots. Now, everybody can assume whatever they want. Is there any evidence that mail-in voting lends itself to cheating any more than any other type of voting?
There is not. In fact, I'll start off overall by saying that my basic statement, based upon lots of studies that have been done over the years, is to say that you have a better chance of buying a Powerball ticket and winning the Powerball than you do in terms of showing that voter fraud is a problem in American politics.
And Lord knows we went through that with the election, right? The first Trump election?
Exactly correct. Is that most people don't realize how much and how complicated the process actually is in terms of how many checks are built into the system for regular voting as well as mail-in voting. So, again, study after study, and I could point particularly to places like, for example, the state of Washington and Oregon, which have almost used exclusively mail-in voting for, I'm going to say, about 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be able to figure out how many zeros goes after it. But when they look at proven cases of voter fraud, it's like 0.0000. I can't, you know what I'm getting at here, like right. Infinitesimally small. So that the evidence is really totally lacking in terms of the argument that there's widespread voter fraud for any type of voting in general, but let alone for mail-in voting. And I always sometimes say to people, and I don't know what the voter turnout is in your state, you know, but nationwide, you know, we're looking at maybe in presidential 60-65%. That's like 60% voter turnout. Lots of people don't vote. The image of saying that people are willing to risk felonies to vote at a time when we have, you know, 40% of the public that doesn't show up. Those two images just don't go together. So the simple answer is that it's been refuted repeatedly. There is no widespread voter fraud in America,
despite what people want to believe. And they all, and I think when it comes to fraud, they always presume it's the other side that's cheating, right? Because if their side's cheating, I don't know if they care as much. Kind of like in football, if it's a bad call and goes against you, then you're outraged. If it goes for you, then it's like, well, it all balances out.
Yeah, I was going to say, it reminds me of a great Calvin and Hobbes cartoon where Calvin once said, I know life is fair, but why can't it be unfair to my advantage? And as long as it's unfair to my advantage, people are perfectly happy with it. I should also point out that most of the instances of voter fraud, when they're found, it's not because of people trying to vote incorrectly. It's because for some reason, a government official made a mistake and said, well, you're eligible when they're not, or something like that. So again, we just don't have this system, what people are claiming of widespread voter fraud. And we found in states that have shifted from not requiring voter ID to requiring voter ID, statistics aren't changing. And so if we, no matter how we cut our studies, we can't substantiate, and there's no evidence of that fraud.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your time. As always, somebody texts in, the perfect crime leaves no evidence. I would suggest you look up logic fallacies and move on from there. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. If Joe wants to take a shot with Mike Strain, I'll go eat some pancakes or something. Joe, you? No, I'm just kidding.
Or get you some popcorn with hot butter.
There you go. Hearing this story about that Grammy thing, you know you have to pay to submit songs of the Grammys to be considered.
I believe that seems like you have to pay to be considered for any award nowadays.
Back in the day, when I first started, we did a commercial with the production director, and it was pretty clever, pretty funny, and everything else. He wanted to submit it for an award. It's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. It's going to cost $125. You know what? The work will speak for itself.
Right.
I don't think I need to pay $125 to be considered for an award. But then again, I'm cheap, right?
but you think about it. You have a lot of great work that people, TV, radio, do. And regardless what award it is, especially for the local Emmy Awards, or the regional Emmy Awards, to be considered, I think it's a $250 fee to enter.
Somebody, I emceed the Press Club Awards, and somebody says this is the only event where the winner is House Burns and Kills 10 People. That's the winner. And you get an award for that. He meant it tongue-in-cheek, not making fun of a situation, of course. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, here on WWO. Oh, it's one of my favorite times of week, 6:44, 16 till 7, WWO. We get to talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Mike Strain? Dr.
Man,
Mike Strain.
I'm doing great. I'm doing excellent. We're getting ready for a meeting this morning at the Farm Bureau in Baton Rouge mm-hmm. with the Mexican Grains Council. Mm. And I'm sure corn is going to be on the top of the subject. So, look, any day we can talk about corn and beans and cotton and rice, it's a good day.
Exporting, you're talking about, right?
That's right. Mexico is one of our largest agricultural trading partners. They rival one or two. So it's always between Mexico and Canada. You know, everyone thinks it's China, but it's not. You know, for agricultural products, Mexico is probably one of our number one markets, and we're trying to continuously expand that and move more products into Mexico. We'll be talking about corn today.
We had the president and owner of Camellia Beans with us yesterday, and he was talking about how every bean that he sells is grown in the United States, and he exports a lot. And it seems like, man, that's the way it's supposed to work, right?
Man, that works, and we're working on that. So, you know, trade is at the top of the agenda. You know, we just finished that trade mission, you know, to the United Kingdom, and we're setting up one now. I've been asked by the British government to go to Scotland on a timber trade mission, and that's what we have to do. 40% of the value we have in our crops comes from international trade. And, you know, so it's a huge part. It's extraordinarily important. And we're really hoping when these interest rates go down, and if we can settle, settlement of the wars there between Ukraine and Russia and get some settlement in the Middle East, the world economy is going to start spinning up again, and you're going to see a lot of activity. And so, we love exporting our grains. We'd rather export more beef and chicken and pork because that's value-added grain, and we do that as well. And so, you know, it's incumbent upon us to continue to press and, you know, and do these exports because, again, trade lifts all ships. And it's number one, it's fun. And number two, it's what we need to do. And look, the United States, we're the largest exporter of food and grains in the world. You know, they talk about the Ukraine being the breadbasket of the world. The United States exports twice what the Ukraine does. And so it's a big deal. And so meeting with our counterparts there and listening to whatever concerns they may have and facilitating trade, getting to look, if you have it, we're ready to sell it and we're ready to move it. And again, trade is both ways, but we're excited about that.
Mike, when you mention exporting beef, you know, I got to ask, with the price of beef being what it is, wouldn't it be better to keep it here domestically and bring the price down, or that's not the way markets work?
That's not the way markets work. You know, you can't put these restrictions on. The way, you know, to deal with the price of beef, we've got to increase production. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's happening across the world, you know, and you hear the whispers when you travel abroad, you know, different governments, especially in the EU, are whispering that tell the farmers, y'all don't need to raise as much beef. Mm. You know, we don't like beef because we don't think it's good for the environment, and they start raising less beef. Well, there's a steady and growing demand for beef, which puts more pressure on us. And so when you look at trade, again, trade is both ways. And we sell a high-value beef product. In the United Kingdom, they feed their animals between 30 and 120 days. A lot of the animals are only fed 30 days. You know, we feed ours for months. Their slaughter weights are about 850 pounds. Ours can, you know, reach 2,200 pounds. So we get more for less. But the bottom line is that we're still decreasing the number of cows. So we need to get more farmers into farming beef, and we've got to raise the number of females. And it's not, you know, chicken you can multiply pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Beef is not the way. It's a 5-year cycle.
What is the gestation period for a cow?
283 days.
What?
You know? And that's right, 283 days. A horse is 333.
Wow.
Right?
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, but in here, one of the things that does have a big effect on the gestation timetable of cattle is heat and humidity. Here in Louisiana, you know, your calving interval can be 12 to 14 months. And when you go in the northern climates, it's a lot shorter because what happens is the cattle basically, you know, don't want to do their thing in the heat and in the high humidity. And it has a negative effect. One of the studies that's going on at our major universities is looking at the effect of the increased heat, even by 1 or 2 degrees, on the hormonal cycles in livestock, what it does to them, and it decreases their reproduction rate. That is another thing that we're trying to figure out how to deal with and to work, you know, genetically to breed, strains of cattle. And what you have here in Louisiana, you look at our cattle in Louisiana, they look a lot different than the cattle up on the East Coast. Remember, we got a lot of the Brahmin influence. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of ear and a little bit of hump and a little bit, you know, you can see that Brahmin influence because they are more able to deal with the heat, the humidity, and the mosquitoes here. But our calving interval is longer, and that's one of the disadvantages we have here in the dairy industry compared, you know, into, say, like Minnesota or Michigan.
Seems like we need a little more hump. Just kidding. Look, when it comes to Grady, let me ask you about Grady. Grady, you're a doctor of veterinarian science. You're a veterinarian, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say. Beloved on the North Shore. And I got to tell you something about Grady when we come back that I caught him doing, and I don't think it's the first time he did it, and I don't know how you keep him from doing it. I'll ask when we return. You got any questions for Mike Strain, 504-260-1870. I saw one of you guys on the road yesterday, Mike, checking gasoline pumps.
Yes, yes.
Part of your duty, right?
We check. We do about 135,000 pumps a year.
All right, 6:50, 10 till 7. More with Mike Strain. We come back. Traffic now, WWO. 6:56, 4 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWO. Back with Mike Strain, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Dr. Mike Strain, a beloved veterinarian on the North Shore. Mike, you know, I already caught Grady eating the worst possible thing that you can imagine, but I understand dogs do that. But that's not the worst of it to me. I caught him drinking out of the toilet yesterday.
They love drinking out of the toilet.
And what,
keep the lid down.
What got me, yes, but I hadn't kept the lid down before because I never caught him doing it before. And now I'm thinking, this dog might have been full of toilet water all this time. You know what I mean?
Well, keep the lid down because once they start drinking out of the toilet, they think that bowl is there for them.
That's what I think happened. I think he may have discovered it. Tell me about seafood tariffs.
Yes. Well, with the seafood tariffs, as you see on India, a 50% tariff is going into place, which would bring the total effective rate to about 68%.
Is that where those radioactive shrimp came from, Mike, India?
No, Indonesia.
Okay.
The radioactive shrimp, which is contaminated with cesium-137, came in from Indonesia. And look, hats off to customs for picking this up.
Mm-hmm.
We think that it triggered, the whole container was full. And cesium-137 is a byproduct. It's a man-made byproduct from nuclear processes. So how in the world did it get into these frozen shrimp? Walmart has recalled these shrimp. It is great value shrimp from BMS Foods. And, of course, the lot numbers have been published. It's in the Times Picayune and other areas, those lot numbers. But Walmart has picked it up. But look to see if you have any, again, great value brand frozen shrimp, product of Indonesia, and, you know, from BMS Foods, take it, you know, look, don't eat it. Because, again, we're trying to figure out how that got in. That's not something we normally testing for. Is, you know, that radioactive material at cesium-137, which can make you very, very sick.
Let me ask you, Mike, real quick, if I can, about testing, because I was talking to A.C. Cooper yesterday, I think it was.
Yeah, good
I think
guy.
Europe tests 50%. We test how many percent?
Oh, we probably test, you know, now 1 in a billion pounds total. So we just started a testing program in Louisiana. We're testing, about 10 samples per week. That's the funding that we have. And we're testing for 20 different antibiotics.
Is that adequate or not? Because I guess what I'm wondering is, how did it get so deregulated where foreign shrimp were allowed in to begin with? Somebody had to be behind that. And
90%
how do you fix
of
it?
Shrimp consumed in the United States are imported, 90%. And so, you know, it's really affected and really driven down in price and driven our people out of business. We need to up the game and obviously test more. It takes considerable funding. And, you know, we're testing at the retail level. You know, we're going in retail and pulling packets, looking at the packets, looking at the labels, and doing antibiotic testing. We have recently found one that was positive for chloramphenicol, and that has been seized by Department of Health and Hospitals. So we need to up the game, and that's something Customs needs to do.
Hi, Mike. Thank you. Hurricane season still to go. Make a plan. Get ready because you never know, right?
Get your game plan now because, look, remember, August 28th is coming up. You know, most people are afraid of Friday the 13th. We get worried about August the 28th.
Yes, sir, we do.
That's
thank you, Mike.
Hurricane time.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great weekend. I appreciate your time as always. Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. You heard him. Once you catch him licking out the toilet, you can't stop it, so just put the lid down. We'll be back. WWL.